This is the Business Storytelling Show, a top global marketing podcast listened to in more than 100 countries, live streamed on social media, and broadcast on DBTV. Christoph Trapp chats with industry leaders to help your company tell better business stories. Here's today's episode.
Hey, 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 business storytellers, Christoph Trapp here, episode 651. Let's get this party going. We want to talk about what do CMOs need to know when it comes to AI? And what's interesting to me, when you are in a leadership role, whether it's probably CMO especially, you got to kind of have that right balance, right? Like, what's the risk? What are the tools we want to use? Budgets, of course. I know on the Marketing AI Institute's podcast, they were talking about, are all these products worth $20 a month per employee? And I think the ones I'm using, they're definitely worth the $20 a month. But it's certainly, you got to kind of balance all those different things. So I'm super excited to talk to Sean Godin today. He and his team, they put out the AI playbook for CMOs. And certainly you can see him on LinkedIn talking about that topic right and left. But super interesting to think about what's important. How do we maximize performance? How do we keep the budget under control? Because before you know it, have you seen that meme maybe, you know, a startup? Are we making any money right now? Well, we are making money, but we're also spending $140,000 or whatever on software tools, or maybe more, depending on what stage they're in. So you got to find that right balance. Really excited to have this conversation. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Nice to see you. And, you know, really appreciate you making the time. Now, tell me about what do CMOs need to think about when it comes to AI? And why is this such an important topic that you focus on?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality, and at some point, I was looking at sort of all of the different capabilities, right, that sort of support marketing and sort of the life cycle that, you know, the customer goes through from branding to planning, mapping out campaigns. And you've got all of these different channels and all of the sort of personalization, where it's like, how do you connect to the right customer at the right time? How do you put the right message? There's content along that journey from beginning to end. And there is just like I think I've mapped out with something like 80% of the capabilities that marketers do today are going to be impacted by, you know, not only generative AI, but I think when we start to connect generative AI with sort of classical machine learning, it's going to just, you know, impact the journey end to end. And then where does that start to hit? Right. You think about sort of, yeah, there's the customer experience, which is where I spend a lot of my time focused on. How do you optimize the customer experience? So the assets and the content that's created, the journey for, you know, as someone is going through that journey, all of this customer data that companies are, you know, getting, and how do you optimize that? There's sort of that view of it, but then the day-to-day folks, the marketers that are sitting behind the tools, right? There's opportunities for AI in there to help inform them how to do their job, how to optimize. You think about marketing analytics, and we were in a world where, well, do I need to be a data scientist to be able to, you know, look at this data? Now with things like generative AI, you can have an English conversation with your data, right? And ask it questions and get feedback, and then have that turn it into a graph in real time. And so, you know, all of these things are going to be impacted. And then on top of all of that, you're thinking about, well, how does this impact my employees? How does this impact my operating model? And then, you know, the question that everyone's asking, like, you know, I always kind of say, like, people say, should we be, you know, sort of cautious and scared of what's coming, or should we be excited? And the answer is yes, right? Like to not do and have both of those mindsets in, you know, hand in hand would not be responsible. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is gonna impact everything that, you know, that marketing is doing. So.
It's just kind of very interesting to me. I mean, it's like how much, I mean, there's like a certain level of this will happen no matter what you do, right? Like there is changes coming and it will affect everybody, whether we're going to do anything or not. And then we have the changes that affect us because we're taking some action, right? Sometimes positive, sometimes negative. I mean, I'm thinking about, I was working on a team not that long ago, maybe 5 years ago, and they were still using, like they were walking their articles on paper to another person to edit. Mm. And I thought that was like, I thought that was a workflow that was like outdated 10 years ago, but they were still doing it because they could, right? Because in their world, it still worked, or at least they thought it still worked. Mm. So some things you can just kind of hang on to, but maybe you don't necessarily have to change. But what are some of these things that they will change, they will impact people? And then maybe after that, I'll come back and I'll give you some examples on some of the things I've done just because I've chosen to make the change today.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, one of the ways that, you know, Cap and, you know, our team has been thinking about this is like, so how do you start to frame sort of the evolution of this, right? So having a bit of a framework is helpful. And I think today we're sort of in this like phase one of like sort of a three phase horizon. And in phase one, we are, you know, sort of a lot of point solutions. You know, marketers have been impacted by the fact that, you know, if you look at, you know, Scott Brinker's MarTech landscape and how the amount of technology, you know, 11, 12 years ago, we had 150 platforms and now we've got 10,000, right? And every one of those vendors is thinking about ways that they can leverage, you know, AI and generative AI in their platforms. And so how do you assess that, right? But I think rather than getting like, you know, kind of like, let's have the end in mind, but we need to be in a state right now where we are, you know, learning these tools, getting our teams involved in just the basics of, you know, what is a prompt? How do you write prompts? How do you write good prompts? And so I think getting your employees in a place where they are touching these tools in a very low risk way is sort of paramount. So we sort of, you know, so if phase one is this, how do we start, you know, sort of working with point solutions, not out there, like, you know, not a lot of companies are going to go build their own models. They might, you know, tweak models or train them for specific uses. But I think what we're going to find very quickly is once we've started sort of putting some point solutions out there, we're going to get to a place where, well, if I have AI in 10 different MarTech platforms, you know, that's helping me with social media marketing content, and then email marketing content and web personalization, and I have a chat bot, at some point, there needs to be an architecture. And so I kind of think of phase two is we're going to start to, you know, build an architecture that allows us to put our brand standards into, to put the types of like ways that, you know, prompts, like prompt libraries will be a thing. And then as you build, you know, sort of, and then how do you connect all of this data that you have in your organization in? So building that sort of architecture is going to allow us to take all those point solutions and chain them together into, you know, sort of more holistic solutions and have some sort of guardrails and a trust layer that gives, you know, the organization and your customers some understanding that, you know, this technology is being used safely and responsibly. And then I'll just say, like, I think phase three, and we see a few organizations starting to think this way, but it's like AI is the operating system for your company. And I think the Publicis Group actually, you know, put out a really interesting sort of strategy around this with what they're calling core AI. And I think, you know, a lot of organizations that are very future focused are going to, you know, sort of be thinking in that direction. But we have to get back to like, what do we do today? And how does this, you know, how do we get started? And I, this isn't a wait, you know, I think in the CMO playbook, you know, we see that it's definitely dropping, but for, I mean, even just a year ago, there was still a significant amount of, you know, CMOs that were, I'm going to wait and see. Well, we're not in a wait and see anymore. Right. There's a very small, you know, contingent of leaders that feel like they can be in a wait and see. But the question is, well, how do I get going? And, you know, and I think that that is the place where, you know, I think, you know, maybe just to answer your question, like the day-to-day work that folks are doing, like generative AI can help support how they're ideating on content, how they're, you know, building briefs for marketing campaigns, being able to use tools like Adobe Firefly and, you know, other generative tools to actually create imagery for ads. Like all of these things, I mean, we're working with clients day in and day out who are taking the leap and driving in and, you know, getting their hands dirty with these tools.
I think it's a very fine balance, like wait and see and go and try. And I mean, I'm always a fan of just going and trying and then let it sit. I'll give you an example. This is not even AI, but back in the day, years and years ago, Brian Fanzo, I think, was the person who said, oh, Amazon has this influencer program now. You can sign up. And I signed up and I was like, and now what? I'm creating an Amazon storefront? Like, and then what? I don't get it. But I still signed up. So I basically, it's like I hurried and then I waited. And then guess what? A couple years later, Amazon rolled out Amazon Live Streaming. And Amazon Live Streaming has been fantastic to me for my content and my just, you know, as a revenue stream and all these different things. But if I didn't sign up back in the day and then didn't know what to do with it, I may have never gotten in. Because guess what happened? When they actually rolled it out, the live streaming, everybody signed up, right? Everybody was trying to get in. So I kind of beat the people to the punch there. But how do you ensure your team uses AI in a reasonable manner? How can you even tell? Like, do you just need training? Do you need to talk about it? Do you need to, like, maybe people need to share how they, what they did? I mean, how do you kind of get there as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, I think, right, when you think about organizations, I mean, I don't think this is necessarily a marketing domain, like specific domain problem. This is a, how are organizations planning for this? And, you know, I think one of the things that I still find a bit shocking is that about 30% of organizations even have a clear policy, right? They might have had some sort of AI policy, and then as generative AI has come out, it's very unclear. And I think that creates a lot of angst for, you know, for your employees, because at the end of the day, you're thinking, you know, they're sort of thinking, well, I think I could use this tool. Am I allowed to use the tool? Which tools am I allowed to use? What types of things, you know, should I use them for and not use them for? And so I think training and sort of just, you know, aligning on a clear policy around, you know, how the tools will be used is key. And I think there's a lot of organizations that have built a lot of templates out there on, you know, how to get started on that. And so, you know, so I think having a policy so that people know what they can do, assessing the tools, right? And this can get somewhat granular, right? Because it could be, well, for your software engineers, we looked at, these five different tools. We looked at the, you know, like, how is the data being used? How well do they work specifically in our organization? And then, you know, and then you, you know, and then you give people access to those technologies in a, you know, in a sort of role, you roll these out, right? You get sort of the, you know, sort of super users, get them trained on the tools, start showing some value out of how the tools can, you know, can be used. And then, you know, and in certain situations, I mean, I've seen it, right, where, you know, I work in financial services for a long time. And, you know, I mean, you couldn't log into, you know, Google, right? If you had a Gmail account or Google Docs account, you were not allowed to connect into any cloud. And so, you know, there's going to have to be a dialogue where you've got a clear use case and you can say, if I could use this tool, I think I could reduce, you know, or drive efficiency by 40%. Will you give these three people access to that tool and we'll do a pilot, right? So I think a lot of these things are getting rolled out in sort of that pilot phase. And, you know, but at the same time, there's, you know, no one, I mean, a lot of organizations, you know, they're not blocking your access to ChatGPT. So if you don't give people a clear path, they're going to use the tools because everybody wants to do their job better and faster. And, you know, and so I think that, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, sometimes I don't think that organizations are in a place of like not knowing they need to do it, but I think the speed in which it needs to be done is just different. Everything around AI right now, I mean, we haven't lived in a period where a technology is evolving at exponential rate on like a quarterly basis. And that is the world we're living in. And so you have to live in a place where you've got a lot of unknowns, right? And so in a space of like, you know, having unknown, create some structure. You know, here's our policy. Here's how you engage with us on how to bring these tools into play. Here's when legal needs to be brought into the dialogue, right? And I think this will, you know, and then you show use case after use case after use case where it's adding value, and then you spread that out to other parts of the organization that can get value with this sort of similar capability.
I mean, maybe I can take a moment to pick on policies, and I don't know if I've seen all that many policies in my lifetime that are actually very clear. A lot of policies, they try to be clear, right? And they try to cover the company. I mean, that's ultimately what a lot of policies are for. They're trying to cover them, but sometimes they're wishy-washy. So let me kind of circle back to the social media when that all started out, right? I mean, I saw policies that said things like, don't do this and don't do that, and whatever the this and that was. By the time the policy was out for 2 months, that thing was already dead in the water. Nobody was even doing that anymore, or that network was already gone. So it's like, how do you even write an AI policy to keep up with the changes? Like, how do you not, like, how do you stay at a high enough level, but you don't go so high that it's just like esoteric, but you don't go so low that it's so specific and it's going to be outdated in a week?
Sure. I'm not a lawyer. So, you know, when I think about sort of the value of, you know, sort of what a policy needs to bring, or what are the principles in which we want to use this technology, right? And I think that it sort of, you know, policies do not control, right? They give people a framework. And so I'm definitely not advocating, you know, like policy will solve this. Policy will set some of the principles. And so when you think about do not put personal, you know, company information or client information into a platform like a large language model, right? Like this, because that, you know, education comes with this, because that information is now being leaving your walls and being put into, you know, being put into the world of the, you know, the internet. And so this is where once you understand that, and we say, we have created a way in which you can use large language models by upload that information into our approved platform. And then and now it's in a safe space. And then now you get the power of, you know, a large language model without the risk and the, you know, and sort of making sure that your company data or your client's data is staying safe. And so that's where sort of this hybrid model or this architecture starts to get into play. And so we just have to be real. I think education is going to be key to people understanding how these tools work and what's happening when you're having this interaction with, you know, with that data. And then there's so that's the input of data. Then there's the output and what comes out, and how, like, having some principles again around, if, you know, one, anything that comes out of AI, you need to look at. You should never think that this is something that you can just take and use it internally or use it with a client of yours. You need to vet it, right? And then you need, like, policies can also drive how transparent are we going to be around, okay, whenever we use these platforms, we are going, you know, we're going to share that the platform was used. And I think these are the conversations that people are having.
It's just, I think one of the issues is when lawyers write policy. I mean, no offense to lawyers. I need them too here and there and talk to them and whatever. But lawyers don't typically write anything, right, to, like, enable you to create better content, right? They're looking at it from the legal perspective. How do we make sure the company doesn't get into bad waters? So I think there is ways to do it. I think the one problem, and maybe this is something definitely should be in a policy, probably according to lawyers too, is my guess, is, you know, I've had people tell me, oh, they just go to whatever platform and they say, hey, write me 100 articles on whatever topic. And then they just kind of blast that out there. Has no uniqueness. It's just like, who knows where the stuff comes from. So that is not good use of AI, right? But like what we're doing here, I would argue, is good use of AI. We got this podcast. Now you can edit a podcast with AI. Like, it literally takes out the filler words. I don't have to do anything. Not that I would do that anyways to begin with. Then I can put a transcript in Otter. Just happens automatically. I can use Opus for clips. It picks the best ones. Usually it's pretty close, but I still have to do some work. Now, I know we could talk about this for 2 more hours, but we are out of time because we do run on dbtv.tv if you want to check them out. Sean, really appreciate you coming on the show. 30 seconds. Tell us, how do people connect with you? Who should reach out?
Yeah, anybody that really wants to, you know, learn more about how marketing can get the most out of AI, connect to me on LinkedIn, or you can reach out to me at sean.gooden@capgemini.com.
Thanks for tuning in. Please rate and review The Business Storytelling Show on your favorite podcast platform, and subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. See you then.